Wednesday to you all. Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to what is the fastest growing segment of society, to those of you who have come to realize, no matter how recently, that the world's political, religious, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they have become counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed, and therefore they are not worth our time. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, it's 877-300-7645. Tragic news out of Jerusalem. When I just read this, it's hard to even share a news story without having to go into a background review to demythicize the terminology. The discovery of a Palestinian boy's body. There is no such thing as a Palestinian boy. There's no such thing as a Palestinian person. There's no such thing as a place as Palestine. The whole thing is a marketing myth. And it's just revolting. And it's just so pervasive. This was a Arab Muslim boy. And that's what really needs to be said. I'm going to go on and tell you more about the tragedy of this story, but not before I can get past the lie that has become so pervasive that the lie is now part of the everyday lexicon. It's used as if it were true. The name Palestine was first used in 135 CE. It was used by Hadrian. The purpose was that after the second Jewish revolt against Rome, and understand, Rome, according to God, is the most vicious beast that ever existed, and from God's perspective, that beast still prevails, that it savages and ravages the world. God hates everything associated with Rome. And that would include, and would be specifically, the Roman Catholic Church today. You don't think so? Go read Daniel 7, 8, and 9. Well, speaking of this beast, in the second savage suppression of a revolt in Jerusalem, both revolts were created specifically by Rome, where in the first case, Caligula demanded that colossal statues of himself as God be erected inside of the temple. That's what started the first rebellion against Rome. Caligula, the most, well, certainly in the top 10, the most despicable, perverted world leaders of all time, demanded that a colossal statue of himself be placed inside of Yahweh's temple, to be worshipped as God. That's what started the first Judean revolt, which began in about 66 CE and culminated with the destruction of the temple in 70 CE. Then in the around 130 CE, Hadrian decided that he would rename Jerusalem. He would rename it for himself. Jerusalem would be called by his name, Capitolina, a place to worship Hadrian. And he decided he would erect a giant temple that would serve both he and Jupiter on the Temple Mount now that they had destroyed the temple. And they would have all roads in Jerusalem be rebuilt that would lead to this grand temple for Jupiter and for Hadrian. That's what started the second Jewish rebellion. And at the end of that rebellion, Hadrian not only crucified hundreds of thousands of Jews, he not only murdered hundreds of thousands more, he not only starved hundreds of thousands of Jews, those who survived both his murderous rage and his sadistic tortures, he enslaved, taking them all off into Rome to be slaves. be sold into slavery. And it was at that time that Hadrian, who was so anti-Jewish, so anti-Yahweh, that he burned every copy of the Torah that he and his men could find and made it a criminal act, punishable by death, to be caught with a copy of the Torah. Those Jews who were caught with a copy of the Torah were burned alive with the Torah soaked in water, wrapped around them, so they would burn slowly and die in agony. Those who advocated the Torah had their skin ripped off layer by layer, slowly, gruesomely. The Torah was outlawed. The Sabbath was outlawed. Yahweh's seven invitations to meet with him were outlawed, all by Hadrian. He then decided that he would take it upon himself to rename the province of Ayuda to Philistina. And he came up with the grand scheme because somebody, as they were disposing of the Torahs, found out that the enemy of Israel had once been the Philistines. He knew full well that the Philistines no longer existed. The last of the Philistines were long gone. As a matter of fact, the only outpost of what was once Gaza that was inhabited was destroyed by Alexander the Great, and there weren't even Philistines in it. There were Egyptians by that time, because the Assyrians completely wiped out the Philistines during the time that they were destroying Israel, the northern kingdom. Obliterated. There was nothing left. Not a trace of the Philistine community. Gone. And the only town that existed, even at the time of Alexander the Great in the 3rd and 4th century BCE, was built as an outpost for the Egyptians, and Alexander the Great tortured them to death. And so when Hadrian decided to rename the province of Ayuda, Philistina, it was only to show his utter disgust for all things Yahweh, all things associated with the Creator, all things associated with his chosen people and his chosen place. It was a beastly, immoral, inaccurate depiction. And so, apart from Hadrian's rage, there has never been a Palestine or a Palestinian people, ever. It is a myth that was laid in egotistical rage by the Romans. And to continue to perpetrate it, to continue to pretend that there's a place called Palestine, as a lot of Christian religious leaders do, as a lot of secular leaders do, as politicians do around the world, shows that the person using the term Palestinian is either ignorant or irrational or immoral, or just flat out stupid. And so here, this is CNN, the discovery of a Palestinian teenage boy's body, shows that whoever wrote this article, whoever edited this article, was either stupid, ignorant, irrational, or they had bought into the agenda that it was okay to deceive so long as the deception serves some political interest within your organization. But so long as this myth continues to be perpetrated, that there is such a place called Palestine and such a people called Palestinians, then the world is led to believe that the Israelis, the Jews, are occupying somebody else's land. That's the natural consequence of this lie. And it is a lie. There is no way whatsoever, rationally, historically, to demonstrate that there ever was a place called Palestine, that there ever were Palestinian people. It is a complete and utter lie, and that lie is being used today to create the myth that the Jews are occupying other people's land, and that as Palestinians, the Palestinians have a natural right to their country, Palestine. And so Israel is being choked to death. Israel is being humiliated. Here, the Presbyterian Church. I was once an elder in the Presbyterian Church. I once gave the keynote address on the major issue at the General Assembly of the Presbyterian Church. And the Presbyterian Church voted just a week ago to boycott all things Israel to side in all possible ways with the Palestinians. What a repulsive decision. What a moronic choice. Despicable. An abomination. This isn't a simple, well, we should just, you know, get along. And who cares what they call themselves? Who cares what they call their country? Does it really matter? Hell yes, it matters. Hell yes, it matters. Even if there were no God, even if God hadn't proved his existence, even if he hadn't formed a covenant with his people, even if he hadn't chosen the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, even if he hadn't promised them this land, even if it wasn't his to give them, even if all of those things were to disappear, and you can't make any of those disappear in any rational discussion, but should those things all disappear, still, the history, archaeology demonstrates that Israel, all of it, belongs to the Israelis and has been their land. And that there are no people who precede them who have claims to that land that still exist. It is their land, all of it. And there is no place called Palestine, and there are no people called Palestinians. If you have to lie this egregiously to promote your agenda is not worth promoting. Now we'll continue with this story, because it is tragic, after the commercial break. So let me correct the story for the morons working for CNN. The discovery of an Arab Muslim teen's body in Jerusalem early Wednesday triggered clashes between Israeli and Palestinians, further inflaming tensions that spiked this week with the discovery of the bodies of three Israeli teens. Israeli police say they are looking into whether the death in Jerusalem was in retaliation for killing the West Bank teens. The body was discovered an hour after police were notified that a Palestinian teenager had been forced into a car in the Beit Hanina neighborhood of Jerusalem. Quote, "We are concentrating on two things," Israeli police spokesman Mickey Rosenfeld said, "whether the two incidents are related, and we're looking into whether this is just a crime or if it is nationalistic." Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called for a speedy investigation to find who is behind this despicable murder and the background to this act, according to a statement from his office. Prime Minister Netanyahu calls on all sides not to take the law into their own hands. Israel, a country, is a country of law, and everyone is ordered not to act, ordered to act according to the law. He went on, the mayor of Jerusalem went on to say, "This is a horrible and barbaric act which I strongly condemn." This is Jerusalem Mayor Nir Bakat. "This is not our way, and I am fully confident that our security forces will bring the perpetrators to justice. I call on everyone to exercise restraint." There are so many things that need to be said about this. First of all, we have no idea who abducted and killed this boy and who burned his body. We don't have a clue. There are a number of possibilities. And I'm going to tell you that the most likely possibility, though I won't swear to it, but certainly the most likely possibility, if this scenario were to play out 20 times, 15 of the 20 times, then the perpetrator would have been members of an Islamic group, killing one of their own, and making it appear as if it was Jewish revenge to turn the tide of public sentiment from being against the Muslims to being against the Israelis. And you might say, oh, wow, you know, that's really stretching it to say that the Muslims would kill their own for that express purpose. But, folks, that's their nature. Why do you think that Muslims in Gaza place their missile batteries, which they fire routinely into Israel, next to schools, next to hospitals, next to apartment buildings? They want Israel to respond and create collateral damage, killing Muslim women and children so they can scream to the world that the Jews are bloody murderers. They do this all the time. The last time there was a major staged incident where Israel in Lebanon destroyed a missile battery that had fired rockets into to northern Israel, and a apartment building was leveled. Well, Israel knew full well that the apartment building had been condemned, that it was unoccupied. And so they took down the apartment building along with the missile battery. But the Muslims, trying to engender international consideration, then went to the local morgue and pulled out bodies from the morgue and staged them all around the fallen building to make it look like, boy, these, look what they have done. That big CNN story about 3 weeks ago, top headline story, you know, the Israeli IDF kills Palestinian boy, it's caught on film. Haven't heard a thing from that story, have you? In this case, the boy wasn't killed. It was all made up. There's all sorts of films of parades by the Arabs, Muslims living in Israel, taking bodies of coffined, open coffins and bodies of young boys down the street with everyone cursing Israel and claiming revenge. And then at the end of the parade, the boy pretending to be dead in the coffin gets up and walks away. They do this all the time. That's who they are. They would absolutely kill one of their own to accomplish this kind of thing. Now, that doesn't mean that that's what happened in this case. And we can consider the alternative when we return to Shattering Myths, the motivations behind the alternative, and why, if that alternative was done by an Israeli, how foolish it was. Let's consider the alternative. And I would say there is probably 5 chances out of 20 that the killing was perpetrated by an Israeli a national. And while I don't think it's likely that the average Israeli national is going to go kidnap a 17-year-old boy and kill him in cold blood, I think it's just not the collective nature of Israel and Israelis. And I've known a lot of Jews and a lot of Israelis. It's just not in their nature. But let's just say that's what was done. Now, I can see, having lived in this kind of environment where the political entity, the religious entity that governs the mindset and the community of Muslims living in your proximity has ordered them on 2 occasions through the intifadas to rise up and kill every Jew that they possibly can. You've seen them use suicide bombs against your people. You've seen them routinely try to kill you. You know that their goal is to eradicate you. And you know that they have fought four wars against you. You know, it's, and then they go off and kill and gleefully celebrate the killing, the murder of three kidnapped boys. It's pretty hard not to to understand why somebody not thinking this all through might say, okay, well, I'll give you some of your own. But typically, Jews are smart people. Now, they're stupid as it relates to their religion, but in some places there, you know, you just don't see how if, for example, if I was the father of one of those boys and I knew who the perpetrator was, I'd kill him. I'd kill him, absolutely. If I was the father of one of those boys that was murdered by Hamas, and I knew the Hamas agent that authorized the kidnapping and murder, I'd kill him too. I can see how killing, if it was your child, killing an adult that was responsible for your son's murder would be an act that many people, I myself, that's one of the things I am not into violence, man. I'm probably the most passive guy. I can't even watch nature films where, you know, the one animal goes, kills another animal doing its business trying to survive. I don't like killing. I'm not even a hunter. I'm a pacifist when it comes to all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I could understand that, but that's not the case here. This young boy had absolutely nothing to do with this. His father and his mother had nothing to do with it. So I just don't see this as being a rational act by people on the Israeli side. I see it as being an irrational act. And if it were done that way, the harm done to Israel, should it have been an Israeli that captured and killed this young man, the harm done to Israel is immeasurable. You turn what was an absolute perfect scenario in terms of, I'm sorry that you know that the perfect scenario arises from the death of three young Israelis, but the way that Hamas celebrated and perpetrated those kidnappings and murders showed to all the world that Israel cannot be forced to negotiate with them, cannot be put in a position to offer them land for promises of peace. It was a huge sacrifice, yes, for those boys and for their families. And it wasn't a planned sacrifice, but the result was extraordinarily favorable for Israel, garnering sympathy for Israel amongst rational, moral people around the world. And to undo that, should an Israeli have killed this Arab Muslim boy, was tragic. And we're not talking about now three lives on one side and one on another. It's the consequence of this in terms of many more innocent lives being lost is gargantuan. Because now it causes the world to take the opposite view of saying, you know, they're just killing one another. There's smoke on both sides. They're equally culpable. They need to be forced to into peace. The world needs to isolate them and force them to have a two-state solution. That's what this second killing did. And that second killing, if it was perpetrated by Israelis, is going to lead to a severing of the land and an eventual overthrow of much of Israel by Muslims. Now, the next part of this is that needs to be discussed is also interesting. That the first response by the Palestinian politicians was to blame Israel for the killing. Israel didn't initially blame Hamas or anyone for the kidnapping of those boys. They did a thorough investigation. It was only after the thorough investigation that they began to say, this is where the evidence points. Hamas just decided that, and the Palestinian Authority, to incite Muslims to riot, which they did, based upon statements that they have absolutely no way of knowing whether or not it's true. We have no clue at this point how this happened. But that didn't change the leaders of the PA, the leaders of the PLO, and the leaders of Hamas already condemning Jews for having done it and starting riots. The other part of it that is extraordinarily different is that when the three boys were kidnapped and then murdered, Hamas and the PLO considered it a great victory. The Hamas couldn't even constrain themselves, or restrain themselves, as they were so jubilant on how wonderful this was. And it's their operatives that perform the act. So here on one side, you've got the government and the religious authority of the people performing the kidnapping and murder and celebrating it. And on the other side, you have the government said, oh, my God, what a horrible thing to do. We're going to find the guilty party and we're going to hold the guilty party accountable. Don't do this kind of thing. One side says that whoever did this thing is a great hero, and the other said whoever did this thing is a repulsive criminal. No, the difference is night and day. The difference is the difference between Islam and morality, between Islam and sanity. It is the distinction between all that is wrong with the Islamic world and that which is civil elsewhere. Just the difference between the response of the governing bodies. If you're a moral, intelligent, informed, and rational person, when you listen to what Netanyahu had to say when he condemned the act, promised to find the culprits, said, let's not rush to judgment. We don't even know who perpetrated this crime. But when we're going to do everything we can to find out who did, and we'll hold them accountable. And I'll guarantee you, the nature of the Israeli government, if it was an Israeli that did it, he'll be in prison for the rest of his life. That's just the nature of things. And it's the contrast here, which is so important. And it's a contrast I think that the rest of the world misses, especially having no ability to understand that there is no moral equivalency here. Now, that was Glenn's call yesterday, saying that some people will look at this conflict between Arab Muslims and Jews as to some degree with moral equivalency. There is none. I mean, I don't know if it's 1,000 to 1 or 1,000,000 to 1 difference between the victims and the victimizers, between the perpetrators and those who are being ravaged. And the worst thing we could possibly do is to reward these savages with their own state. If you think that Gaza, Hamas and Gaza firing rockets into Israel, if you think that the trafficking in human organs that takes place now throughout the Sinai, because America forced Israel to give up control of Gaza and to give up control of the Sinai, if you think that has made the world better, then I can see why you would think giving the Palestinians, this mythical people, their own state would be a solution. But folks, I'm here to tell you, if that's what happens, we're on the cusp of World War III. Just a little more information on all of this. The boy, Mohammed Abu Kader, 17 years old, don't know anything of his past. Do not know if he himself was engaged with Hamas, was acting as a terrorist, if he was one of those throwing Molotov cocktails previously, one of those gloating about the abduction and killing. If he was, then he contributed to his own demise. Don't know. If he was just a average kid born to the wrong parents in the wrong place in the wrong time, then I feel sorry for him. I feel sorry for his parents. Do not know at this point. His body was charred and bore signs of violence. The teens, and you know, when you see the, let's say that this was perpetrated by an Israeli, and it was done in retribution. Wouldn't you want to know that it was done in retribution? Wouldn't you want the body somehow marked or the somehow signed and say, you know, a tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye? You celebrated the kidnap and capture of our children. This is the consequence. Wouldn't you do it that way? Or if you were trying to make it look like they did it, would you try to hide all of the evidence? Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Glenn on the line, and Glenn was the one yesterday who at least presented the idea of moral equivalency and how many people might hold that view. And clearly, the killing of the Arab Muslim boy tends to move the world in that direction. Hi, Glenn.
Hello, Yada. Yeah, today it's not so much about moral equivalency for me, but actually on the muddying of the waters. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. we live in the age of false flags, and they've long existed, but now more and more people are coming to know about them, and we know that truth is always the first casualty of war.
Yep.
And just this last Monday night, I heard a pro-Palestinian Muslim radio pundit posit the possibility that the very killing of the three Israeli boys was a false flag in and of itself, because the Hamas would have had derived no benefit from killing them. If they had kidnapped them, they would have used them for leverage. So he had already posited Monday night that maybe this was done by Israelis to these to these boys for the purpose of vilifying
That's standard Muslim response to everything. As Muslims celebrated, for example, 9/11, and they celebrated worldwide 9/11. Then when America struck back at Muslims after 9/11, they all said, you know, it was a false flag. It was perpetrated by the Mossad to bring American weaponry against the Muslim boys and girls. It's very typical.
They definitely strike back. America struck sideways.
Well, that's true.
They would have gone after Saudi Arabia.
That's right. They'd have gone to Saudi Arabia. That is true. But that kind of a story, I don't think has any credibility. First of all, because of the source and the fact that that's their standard response to everything that they do. But because of the fact that there is no mistaking the fact that Hamas publicly and vociferously endorsed the kidnapping, celebrated the kidnappings, promoted the kidnapping, said this is the kind of behavior we want to see more of, congratulated the kidnappers, and called them heroes.
Right.
So,
as I said yesterday, it's a shame that wasn't more widely publicized, because most people don't know that happened. And why wasn't carried in mainstream media?
And that's the only reason that the false flag, apart from that information, the false flag adds, you know, muddies the water at least. But when you have that information and you realize that immediately after the kidnappings, the PLO and Hamas in their newspapers printed an illustration showing the three boys held in the World Cup intertwined hands with the insignia victory underneath it, it means that it's not possible. So it's not credible, because the PLO and Hamas both celebrated it as a great thing.
It's so pathetically reprehensible. I can't imagine that anybody would want to make hay with it by publicizing that.
Yeah.
Why would they not?
The reason that Hamas and the PLO do that is because they're influenced by Islam. They're influenced by Sharia law. And Muhammad was a kidnapper. Muhammad was a mass murderer. Muhammad was a slave trader. Muhammad engaged in these behaviors. So these behaviors, where we would consider in the West kidnapping bad, murder bad. In Islam, kidnapping good, murder good, because Muhammad was a kidnapping murderer. And so that's why they would celebrate it.
The Western media soft-pedaled this and didn't, and why that should have been trumpeted. Those responses should have been trumpeted far and wide.
Yeah.
So people could see this reprehensible response to this.
Right. I am not a full-time news junkie. And I don't have anyone as a research assistant working on my behalf. All I've got for news is I've narrowed it down to about 8 or 9 news feeds: Reuters, Washington Post, BBC, Fox News, the International Tribune, the New York Times, for example. I mean, those are my news feeds, and each day I get the top 8 stories from each of those news feeds. And it was in, one of those sources, it was in their top 8 stories for a matter of about 15 minutes right after it occurred. And so I reported it, and then about 15 minutes later, it was in another, the gloating was on another news feed.